Hey, everybody, and welcome back for another deep dive with us. This time we're going to be talking about music law.
All right.
And you know how much I love music.
Absolutely, a fascinating area.
Yeah, so this is Songbird v. Bearsville Records. And it's a case that really gets into, what happens when a musician's work well.
Oh.
Their recordings in this case kind of gets caught up in a legal battle.
Yeah, and this case is a really great example of just how important it is to understand things like statutes of limitations and how those can really impact ownership rights. So we'll be talking about that today.
Yeah, deadlines matter. All right, so to set the scene, we're going back in time to New Orleans,
Okay.
birthplace of jazz,
Of
right?
course.
And think about Professor Longhair.
Oh, yeah. Henry Rollin Byrd, what a legend.
Exactly. Back in the 70s, he laid down some amazing iconic tracks. And those recordings, those master recordings, those are really what's at the heart of this case.
Absolutely. And, master recordings are so important because they're not just, pieces of music. They're valuable assets. They can generate income and really help to preserve a musician's legacy.
Right. So in this case, those recordings ended up changing hands.
Yeah.
And this is where the story gets interesting because that ultimately leads to this lawsuit years later.
Yeah, it's like a real life game of musical chairs, except the stakes are way higher.
Yeah, no kidding. So let's back up a bit. Tell us about Professor Longhair and how these recordings ended up in New York with Bearsville Records.
So Professor Longhair, or Fess, as he was known, was a true innovator in New Orleans piano. I mean, his music was just this amazing blend of blues, boogie-woogie, and you even hear some Caribbean rhythms in there, and it really created a unique sound that influenced generations of musicians.
Wow.
Yeah, and those master recordings, they were made in Louisiana in the early 70s, and somehow they ended up with Bearsville Records in New York. So there's a story there, but we'll kind of fast forward to 1986. That's when things start to get a little bit heated. Bearsville, they license those recordings to Rounder Records, and Rounder Records, they release albums in 87 and 91.
Okay.
But here's the thing. Professor Longhair's representative, Songbird Inc., they'd been requesting the return of those recordings. They wanted them back.
Oh, so they knew something wasn't right. They suspected that maybe their rights were being messed with.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh.
And in 1995, they finally decided to take legal action. So they file a lawsuit against Bearsville in Louisiana claiming conversion.
Okay, so wait, Louisiana. But you said Bearsville's in New York. How does that work?
Yeah, so this case had kind of a wild ride procedurally. It starts in Louisiana State Court, then it moves to federal court, then goes up to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, and it finally ends up in the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of New York.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it really traveled.
So what was the main legal issue? What was the big fight about in the case?
So the big question was whether Songbird's claim for conversion was filed too late. We're talking about the statute of limitations.
Ah, yes, the statute of limitations, the legal ticking time bomb.
Exactly. And in New York law, there's a 3-year limit for filing these conversion claims. Seems straightforward enough, right?
Yeah.
But the issue is figuring out when exactly that 3-year clock starts. Did it start back in 1986 when Bearsville first licensed the recordings, or did it begin in 95 when Songbird officially demanded those recordings back and was refused?
So the timing is crucial. Were there any other cases or precedents that the court could look to try to figure this out?
Yeah, there were two main precedents that came up, Sporn v. MCA Records and then Guggenheim v. Lubel. So in Sporn v. MCA Records, they established this rule that the clock starts ticking at the moment of conversion, not when the owner discovers it.
Okay.
Which doesn't sound too good for Songbird, right? If we're thinking about Bearsville licensing the recordings in 86. But Guggenheim v. Lubel, that introduced kind of an exception. It's the demand and refusal rule, and that says that the clock might actually start later if the possessor of the property was a good faith purchaser, meaning they had no idea it was stolen or that there was a dispute.
Okay, so was Bearsville a good faith purchaser?
That's the big question, right? I mean, they had those recordings since the 70s.
Yeah, it doesn't sound too good.
We'll have to wait and see what the court decided.
Welcome back to our deep dive into Songbird v. Bearsville Records. You were just saying that Bearsville might have been okay if they could prove they were these good faith purchasers of the recordings.
Right. That good faith purchaser argument could have really helped them out, but in the end, the court just didn't buy it.
Really? So walk us through like how they got to that decision. How did they apply the Sporn and Guggenheim precedents to this case?
So the court, they looked at all the facts, and they decided that Bearsville was not a good faith purchaser. And remember, they'd had the recording since the 70s.
Oh, yeah.
So that really worked against them.
So they couldn't really say, like, oh, we didn't know.
Right, exactly. And because they weren't considered a good faith purchaser, that demand and refusal rule from the Guggenheim case, it didn't apply. So the court, they saw that 1986 licensing deal with Rounder Records as that crucial moment of conversion.
Okay, so that's when the clock started ticking, even though the lawsuit wasn't filed until 1995.
Yeah, it really highlights how important it is to understand these deadlines and to act quickly.
Yeah, so even though Bearsville kept making deals with the recordings, it was that very first one that kind of doomed them. So that seems like a really important lesson for anybody who deals with intellectual property, or any kind of property, really.
Absolutely. This case shows that timing is everything when it comes to these legal battles. If you think someone's controlling your property unlawfully, you got to take action and you got to do it quickly.
Right. So don't wait around. But what about those later deals? Does it seem unfair that Songbirds might have missed out on profits because they didn't sue sooner?
Yeah, it definitely raises some questions about, you know, how we balance these property rights and encouraging collaborations. But the court made it clear that it's not about, like, restarting the clock every time something new happens.
Right, so there has to be a definite starting point.
Exactly. It makes sense procedurally.
Okay, so let's talk about documentation for a minute. We always hear, get it in writing. But how does that apply to a case like this?
Documentation is crucial in any legal case. It's really the proof you need to back up what you're saying. In this case, if Songbird had more documentation about when Professor Longhair made the recordings, any agreements he made, and any attempts to claim his ownership rights, it would have been so helpful.
So we're talking about contracts, letters, maybe even notes or recordings from back then.
Exactly. Having those records, that paper trail, it helps establish a timeline of what happened and who owns what.
Right. And it protects you.
Absolutely. It can be the difference between winning and losing a case.
So it's about more than just proving your case. It's about preventing these problems from happening in the first place.
Right. When you have your documentation in order, it shows that you're serious about protecting what's yours.
This has been so insightful. It's amazing how one case can teach us so much about the legal system and the problems that artists face trying to protect their work. But what could Songbird have done differently to avoid these statute of limitations problems?
That's a great question, and it's something to think about as we wrap up our depth dive today. What if they'd been even more proactive? Could they have tried different legal strategies?
We're back and ready to wrap up our deep dive into Songbird v. Bearsville Records. We've covered a lot of ground, but before we go, let's get back to that question we left off with. What could Songbird have done differently to avoid running into that statute of limitations roadblock?
Yeah, that's the big question, right? It's easy to look back and say, what if? But thinking about these things can really help us learn from the past and maybe avoid making the same mistakes in the future.
So let's put on our legal thinking caps for a second. What other options might Songbird have had?
Well, they could have been even more assertive from the beginning. Remember, they were already asking for those recordings back in the 80s? Maybe they could have pushed harder for some kind of agreement or even thought about taking legal action earlier instead of waiting until 95.
So it's not just about knowing your rights.
Yeah.
You have to actually stand up for them.
Right? Sometimes you need to flex a little legal muscle to get things moving. They could have also considered other legal strategies, like trying to get an injunction to stop Bearsville from licensing the recordings in the first place.
An injunction? So that's like a legal stop what you're doing order, right?
Exactly. It's a court order that says, hey, you can't do that. It might have stopped Bearsville from making those deals. Of course, there's no guarantee the court would have granted it, but it's definitely a strategy to keep in mind.
So the lesson here is to know what your options are and talk to a good lawyer who can help you figure things out.
Absolutely. The legal world can be confusing. Having an experienced guide can make all the difference.
This whole case really shows how important it is to be informed and prepared. Like you said before, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. But what if, even after doing everything right, you still end up in this kind of situation? What advice would you give to someone facing a potential conversion claim?
First thing, don't freak out. Take a deep breath and gather all the information you can. When did this happen? Who's involved? What evidence do you have?
Like putting together a puzzle. The more pieces you have, the clearer the picture becomes.
Right. Once you have a good understanding of what's going on, then go talk to a lawyer. A good attorney can help you figure out your options, come up with a plan, and navigate that whole legal process.
So be proactive, be informed, and get expert help if you need it, like having a legal toolbox ready just in case.
Exactly. And remember, the legal system is there to protect your rights, but you have to be willing to fight for them. Don't be afraid to stand up for what's yours.
This case has really opened our eyes to a lot of things. It's amazing how much we can learn from just one legal battle.
It's a fascinating look into the complexities of intellectual property law and the challenges artists face when they're trying to protect their work.
Well, on that note, it's time for us to wrap things up. Thanks to everyone for listening to this deep dive into Songbird v. Bearsville Records.
We hope you've enjoyed learning about music law and how important it is to protect your creative rights.
Remember, knowledge is power. Stay informed. Stay vigilant, and keep those creative sparks flying. We'll see you next time.